And welcome everybody to another Beer, Bourbon, and Balderdash.
Balderdash.
I was really high and you went really low with it.
Balderdash.
There you go. So this is going to be episode 27, Hanging Tough.
Replay. Oh.
Hanging tough. We're terrible. Yeah. Don't quit your day job, man.
I'm no Donnie.
Who is besides Mark? The beer is.
Would you rather Sierra? Be Mark or Donnie?
Mark.
Yeah.
Totally Mark.
Yeah, me too.
God, who want to be Donnie? I mean, Donnie had a pretty successful career on Blue. Why are we talking about this? The okay, beer. The beer is Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Classic.
Yeah. I mean, he got to work with Tom Selleck, so that ain't too bad. Yeah. The bourbon was Bullet Bourbon. Which is a great one. Awesome. And the classic. Balderdash was the first time we talked about mental toughness. And this is a topic looking through our half-assed chart here. we actually touched on quite a bit mental toughness. Because I think it's, to me, it's like when you know your pastor's going through something is when he keeps talking about a certain topic. It means that he's not only doing a Bible study for his congregation, he's doing it for himself. So if your pastor's always talking about this certain topic, he's wrestling with it or he's going through it. And I feel like you and I keep coming back to this because I think we want to be mentally tougher. I know I do.
Oh yeah.
And maybe sometimes we're struggling a little mentally. And so this is a thing that we want to kind of, it helps. It becomes a vehicle to get stuff off our chest maybe.
Yeah, for sure. I know for me over the last couple years, especially after moving out here, I've been struggling with some challenges, some mental challenges, psychological challenges or whatever you want to call them. But so this is like, it's like for me, it's therapeutic to talk about it and to like reiterate the things that I've learned and how I'm improving it. Like some of the things that you come across or you talk to with a therapist or a psychiatrist, it helps to cement them in your memory. Yeah. When you talk about it with somebody else, when you share it with somebody else, and then you don't feel like you're going through it by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which nobody should feel like they're going through it by themselves.
No, I think a topic that we should talk about soon. I agree with you, by the way. I don't want to just drive by what you just said because it's important.
Oh, sure.
I've been doing a Bible study. This is kind of why I bring it up on willpower and self-control. Hmm. And so I've gone through this book. And it's like half psychological, scientific stuff and half biblical perspective. So it's kind of how they kind of hold each other's hands through willpower and self-control and fruit of the spirits and stuff like that. And one of the things that they talk about is that community and having people that are either struggling or trying to get through the same things as you are. It makes you more successful in helping you with whatever it is that you're going through because they're not like sainthood where it bums you up because you're not as good as they are. And they're not, you know, in the dredges dragging you down. They're kind of right where you need to be. And this is why AA is so successful or those kind of programs is because you're in a community of people who are just like you trying to work it out just like you are. And even your sponsor is someone who is, even though they might have kind of crossed some paths that you still have to cross or bridges, they still have a struggle that's within them as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think to your point, that's, you know, it's helpful to be able to express those things and talk to people and find people that maybe also are having a rough time. And you know, it could just be a moment. It doesn't have to be like, you know, the last year. I mean, I know you've had really highs as well as some really lows, as we talked about on the show, where it's kind of seasonal sometimes too. You know, like right now, it's like everything's great. And then like maybe next month, you're like, oh, I'm really kind of down and blue and I'm in my head. And when I'm locked in my head, like I'm imagining all kinds of things that aren't true. And we cycle. And if we could talk about those things with someone that like, yeah, I'm, you know, it kind of unlocks someone else going, yeah, I kind of get that way too. And I'm glad you brought that up and so on and so forth.
Yeah, very much so. Well said.
So we should talk about that sometime on some upcoming episodes. But for now, I hope you guys get to enjoy our first foyer into mental toughness with episode 27. And you have to say it this time, man.
Why the fuck do I have to say it?
Cheers, brother.
Look, there it goes.
Love you.
Cheers. Love you too. Mm. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Where I can just sit and be sad by myself, putting on a happy face.
I mean, you might be sad, but this is good for you.
It is.
This is good. This is good for Johnny No Pants.
Certainly, it's a challenge.
Yeah, so you get to come home though tomorrow, so you'll be home by the afternoon.
My flight lands at 10:25.
Hey,
Ellen's picking me up.
Nice.
We're gonna have sex back to the car.
Yep, that's what you're supposed to do. Because you can't wait. Just That's explode right. in your pants as soon as you see her. Ew. Welcome, everybody, to Beer, Bourbon, and Balderdash.
Balderdash. I can't believe that's the way
it's That's how we're opening. That's how it goes.
Exploding.
Yeah, exploding pants.
Like the chocolate thunder down under.
That's right. Well, hey,
terrible,
I mean.
Terrible name for a dessert.
If I haven't been around Dana for a while. Be sure, man. Oof, that'd be super rough.
I know.
Well, Johnny, how you doing, man? So now you've done your time in Boston. You get to come home, have some free time.
Make it sound like a prison sentence.
Yeah, well, kind of is.
And it's no, you are. they actually have T-shirts that I saw for sale at a Red Sox stand at the train station that said, "You think you're smart?" By the way, smart is spelled SMART.
Yeah,
smart.
That's funny. When I was at Total Wine and More today in the beer section, there was, I think, a chocolate stout or something like that called Forget About It.
Forget About It. I think I've seen that one.
Yeah. We should go shopping while you're home at Total Wine and More and just pick up some craft beers and stuff. But you're going to bring some back anyways, aren't you?
I am. I went to Total Wine and More here.
Yeah.
Looking for that sponsorship, Total Wine and More. Great selection, reasonable prices.
They don't have BevMo there.
I don't know. Total Wine and More was close to where I was going anyway.
Yeah.
And they actually had this one was huge. It had a great selection of all sorts of different things.
Okay.
I was actually pretty impressed. And they had a really large selection of individual cans of beer because they didn't want to buy a bunch of six packs.
No.
And so what I actually did is I bought, I think, half a dozen pairs of beers.
Okay.
And I'm bringing half of them back.
Nice.
To leave with you.
Yeah.
So that we can have them to space out over the next handful of episodes. And my thought was like, we could do the same thing in Seattle with Seattle beers on by two of each and you keep one.
Yes.
And I bring one back. And
yep.
then we can actually get official. And I want to make a spreadsheet of everything we've drank.
Woo.
And then start pre-planning what we're going to drink.
Yeah.
So
we'll do it now because before we get to like 50 episodes and you're like, whoa, oh my God, I got to go through all these episodes and figure it out.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
But it would be great to like actually pretend like we do things on purpose sometimes.
Well, if you create that spreadsheet, then we can also kind of put in our notes too and stuff. So
yeah. Well, I'll do it on a Google Sheet too so it can be shared.
Oh, Google Sheet.
It's okay. They don't care what we drink. Or they might. You know what? We might start getting ads for all sorts of things.
We probably will, actually.
Or we might start getting advertisements for AA. These two definitely have a problem. They have exactly one document and it's just alcohol.
We have two of our neighbors in our alley. Both are building Daddy's right now. Mm-hmm. And I have, you know, talking to the neighbor behind us, that's they already poured the cement and everything for that one. It's coming along. Mm-hmm. And whenever I talk to them and they use words like ADU or DADU, mm-hmm. all of a sudden on my Instagram and whatnot, I'm getting advertisements now for, I think it's called Abode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which actually looks freaking cool. But I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. That happened to me today, too. It's something that I know I've never searched.
Yeah, but you probably said out loud.
Yeah, well, it's Bill, the man of the couple that I'm staying with.
Yeah.
He talked about something. I can't even remember what it was. And it showed up as an ad on my phone. And I know it's not something I searched. So then I went back and it creeped me out. So I went back in to try to turn off my, I don't know what they call it on the Android phones. Quinby or Kirby or.
I don't know.
I don't know. Cuisinart.
Yep.
I don't know. Cuisinart. Whatever it is.
Nope. Cuisinart.
I did an update, and now it just keeps coming, like, regularly listening in, and like it shows up. It's like, oh, did you want to have somebody touch your butthole? No.
Yes. I mean,
I didn't think you were listening.
You're not supposed to be listening to this. Well, I keep talking about Dana's big butt just to myself, but I never see big butt ads, so I'm a little disappointed. Johnny, what are we drinking today?
Today we're doing, so this is part of what led to the idea of having the pre-planned beers,
yeah,
and picking things up, is because it's been a little bit of a challenge,
yeah,
trying to find things that are interesting and on both coasts.
Yep.
And so buying the beers and bringing them, shuttling them back and forth, I think will be a good way to give us some more options. However, today we're going to be drinking Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which is available across the country.
I got the right one. Yeah, yay, we got the right one.
I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't brewed in the same place, though.
Yeah.
A lot, let's see. Bottle, Sierra Nevada, Chico, California,
and Mills River.
River, North Carolina.
Yeah, do you think you got the North Carolina bottle?
I'm almost 100% sure.
Yeah, you
sure
probably did.
But I don't know.
Mine says packaged on 6/16/22.
Mine is too hard to read because it's so humid here.
Just sweat it off.
It's so wet. Like my bits. Where did you see the package then?
It's on the back label above pale ale on mine.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Yeah, speak in the microphone.
I can't read it. I think it says May 5th,
ooh,
2022.
Yours is older. All right.
Yeah, age to mediocrity.
Age to mediocrity. Well, that's kind of one of the things, is I'm going through the craft beer section at Total Wine and More, where I could pick up a 4-pack or something instead of just trying to find 12 packs. And I actually found a 6-pack of the Pale Ale, and I was like, oh, I don't want to fucking get it, because I don't actually drink beer on the regular. I only yeah. drink beer with you.
Do they not have an individual can section?
Well, yeah, but it's there. I mean, they didn't have this limited. In an individual. It's super limited. I mean, there's like cold snacks. Those were individual.
Man, the one that I was at, it was like an entire aisle.
Yeah.
Like half of an aisle. So it was like all the craft beers and then all the ciders and all the imports. But there was a whole bunch of good ones. So I was glad.
Yeah. In Texas, when we were at HEB in Waco, Texas, I mean, we found, it was like a half aisle of just singles. And I brought some of those home for us to try because they're just singles or whatever. But anyways, man, cheers.
Hold on. I'm pouring.
That was loud.
Why is my cheersing so sad?
That was pretty sad.
We'll try that again.
Oh, I don't know, dude.
Disappointing. One more reason that Boston sucks. Can't cheers.
Yeah, it sucks.
Cheers.
Cheers. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. Oh, I like it better than the Lagunitas, for sure, already.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's much more balanced. The Lagunitas, though, wasn't it the IPA?
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little more hoppy. This is a little more balanced. Sierra Nevada is a cool brewery, too. They actually started as home brewers, and they talk about their story. They've been around a really long time, and they're heavily supportive of the home brewing community.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this is their flagship beer, and it's been around forever, and it's good. It's solid. It's everywhere.
Yeah. It's delicious.
I appreciate that they work to grow, to help other brewers grow. They don't look at it as a competition like a lot of craft breweries do. Like they tend to help each other.
Yeah.
Versus like, and then sometimes when they get big, then they try to dominate the market and
yeah.
aren't so interested in helping others. But Sierra Nevada's never seemed to be that way. They're a good company.
Yeah, and I've had other stuff from them that I've actually really enjoyed. Aren't they the ones that also do the narwhal?
I don't know.
I think they are. That one's one that's hard to find for me. Sierra Nevada. Narwhal. And the narwhal, I think, was... Yeah, it's an imperial stout. Yeah, Sierra Nevada. Mm. Strong, dark, malty stout. It's one of my favorites.
Like that one?
Yeah, I love the narwhal. Hmm. I mean, it's kicky in the teeth, like strong. Yeah. It's a 10%er.
That's but, a shareable.
Yeah. No, I just own myself, bitch.
Oh, Jesus. Well, why you don't want to
share? Leave daddy alone with his narwhal. Let him be.
So aggressive. Someone needs a hug.
I haven't been touched in days.
Somehow I doubt that.
This is what happens. I'm touched all the time. I'm touched.
Yourself doesn't count.
Yeah. Damn. How'd you know?
You're in Nevada. Beers.
Yeah. No, this is really nice. On second drink of the Lagunita, I didn't necessarily care for it. Well, on my second beer, I was kind of like, eh. You know, and I kind of, as I was drinking, I was thinking, this is what I don't like about IPAs. Like, this is everything I don't like. It doesn't have, like, a, it's not unique. It didn't taste unique. It was like, eh, it's an IPA.
Yeah.
So you know, I'll probably take a lot of these beers, and I'll bring them to family functions and offer them to people, because I probably won't be drinking a lot of these.
That's a good option.
But this one's good.
I think we're going to try to do a Labor Day party. You can bring them to those.
Or on your new deck.
Oh, here. This is fantastic. I just popped up their website, and like I said, they're very into the homebrewing world because they started as homebrewers.
Yeah.
And they actually have a pale ale homebrew recipe on their website.
Oh, really?
That they share for making a 5-gallon batch, which is the most common size that you would make in a homebrew. It's their version of the homebrew. It's here in Nevada pale ale.
Nice.
Which is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Good dudes, for sure.
Yeah.
How to make Sierra Nevada pale ale.
Brew have you ever a tried? Beer
with this recipe. No, I don't actually really. I haven't brewed much in a while. I never really liked making other people's beers.
Yeah.
But what I would do is I would take a recipe like this. I've never made a pale ale like this before, but I would take recipes of beers that I knew, and I would buy those beers and I would taste them and look at the clone. Like, there's a lot of clone recipes out there. People who think they've dialed in making an exact clone, yeah, whatever beer you want.
The Coke recipe.
Kinda, but Coke's gross. That's not true. I like Coke. That's stupid. I don't even know why I said that.
It's good that you corrected yourself like right away.
But yeah, I would take like.
This segment sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Get your Coca-Cola at Total Wine and More, next to the rum aisle.
Just kidding.
Oh, looking for those dollars.
That's right.
Yeah, I would take the recipes that I would look at the clone recipes people have made for beers that I liked, and taste the beers. And that would help me understand what different malts did in the recipes.
Yeah.
And also reading about the description of them and really understanding. And then actually the thing that helped the most was going into the brew store and actually eating the malt, like taking a little bit and chewing it.
Oh, yeah.
So you kind of get the flavor profiles of it. And then I would take those recipes and I would modify it to be what I wanted it to be. So it was more my recipe, because I wasn't really that interested in making somebody else's beer. But it's a good place to start, especially if you're new and you're trying to understand how brewing goes. Your home brewer, it's a really good place to start.
Yeah.
Especially if there's a beer you truly love. And then you can see how hard it is sometimes to actually make the exact beer that other people's make.
Yeah.
People make. Because many things matter. The equipment, the grain, the age, the temperature you do it at, your fermentation, your yeast. You don't try to make an exact copy of somebody else's. You won't be disappointed when it's not right.
Well, let me think. I think the only beer I've ever had of yours is, I think, the Scotch Ale. Mm. And I think that was one of my favorites. I'm already a fan of Scotch Ale, and that one was delicious. I think Helen was a fan of that one, too, if I remember correctly.
Well, yeah, it was super heavy-duty, kind of syrupy and sweet. It wasn't sweet, actually. It was Actually, it was more earthy and malty. Oh, that beer was good.
That beer was good.
I made it to age for a while, and it disappeared very quickly.
Yeah, it didn't age well. Yeah. But it went down well.
Yeah. Well, Wes, now that I'm halfway through my beer already, because I...
Yeah, I am too. Well, it's actually really good. It's malty. I like the malty flavor more than the...
It's yummy.
...than the bitter hoppiness type thing. I like the maltiness, which makes sense.
I do really like to point out to people that IPA stands for India Pale Ale. So Pale Ale and India Pale Ale are not actually that different.
They're not different.
They're different, by the classifications, but it's still a pale ale. It's just a specific version of a pale ale.
Okay. Okay. Well, tonight for our bourbon.
Okay. Don't dismiss me like that. I'm not your wife.
I wasn't dismissing you.
I'm just kidding. You don't dismiss
me. There was a long pause there. I waited for you to ramble on about something else, and then that's how I talked to Dana.
Yeah.
I waited for you to shut your fucking trap, and so I could talk now.
I'm pretty sure you don't say that to
her. I would not. Okay. I like being married. That's why I would not
do that. I like being married, too.
Plus, she is a very kind, special person that does not deserve to ever be talked to like that.
That is very true. She is a wonderful woman.
Yep. So we're going to do a bullet bourbon. Hey. When I first started drinking whiskeys, like kind of getting into it, this is the one that I really, really enjoyed a lot.
Did we get the right one?
Yes. One? Yeah. The
red label.
Orange red label.
Mm-hmm. Orange red label.
Just a regular old bullet bourbon frontier whiskey.
Yeah.
And a lot of it had to do with a friend of Dana's that she worked with on a technology committee for the union. His name is Frank. And Frank loves bullet bourbon. And he had me try some, and I really enjoyed it. And that's kind of what got me to, you know, start thinking about whiskeys and drinking more whiskeys and finding out about whiskeys. And, you know, and so this is good that we did this one. So. Mm-hmm. It says bullet bourbon is inspired by the whiskey pioneered by an old family recipe over 150 years ago. Unfortunately, they don't say what family or if it was their family. And it says only ingredients of the very highest quality are used. The subtlety and complexity of bullet bourbon comes from this unique blend of rye, corn, barley, malt, along with special strains of yeast and pure Kentucky limestone filtered water, which is what's coveted in Kentucky.
The filtered water.
Yeah, the limestone filtered water. Mm-hmm. Jack Daniel's, the stream at the Jack Daniel's distillery, it's like a almost like a grotto full of limestone water that they use. That's the water they use, is fresh right there.
Mm-hmm. The water is a much more impactful part of the brewing, I think, than people realize too. Like,
oh yeah,
in the brewing software I have, they have a whole section that is to try to recreate water from different regions based on the water in your region, so you can add different things to it. So beers from Great Britain typically have a lot of calcium in them.
Yeah.
Well, what is that? It's not limestone.
If it's calcium rich.
Yeah. Yeah. The calcium, the Cliffs of Dover are stark white.
Hmm. Yeah, because I don't know what kind of stone that is. Same,
but it's, I don't remember. I don't think it's limestone. It's something else, but...
Yeah.
I should know this. This is dumb.
Is the Boddingtons that we get here in the United States, is that bottled here or canned here in the United States or exported?
I think most are exported.
Yeah.
Imported.
Okay. Imported, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, exported is right, too, depending on your...
It also says, due to its especially high rye content, bullet bourbon has a bold, spicy character with a finish that's distinctively clean and smooth. I won't say anything else because we're going to cheers and then we're going to tasty, tasty.
Okay.
You ready?
With an eye.
Oh, I got to... Do I cheers my... Oh, my God. I feel like I'm going to break it. Yours is better. Nice. Cheers, brother. Oh yeah, I mean, it's much more like a rye, honestly.
Mm-hmm. It definitely has that rye bite, and it kind of feel like it needs to sit for a minute. It's got a lot of alcohol on the nose. That first waft needs to go away.
It definitely tastes a little different because I have that pale ale lingering in my mouth, so I can definitely. Mm-hmm. I can definitely tell that.
Yeah. It having different things in your mouth can make things taste weird.
I did detect it's pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. Sweet on the palate. It actually tastes and smells more like a rye than it really does a bourbon. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have like a Chattanooga rye here that probably smells pretty similar to it. But yeah, it's It's got that bite. I like that bite. Mm-hmm. And that might be why I started liking this. It might be why I like Rise, is just because of this. Yeah. High rye mash bill.
I like that too. And I like the sweetness that still is there because it,
yeah,
kind of like an IPA, like, or I like that pale ale, like they were having the maltiness and the bitterness from the hops kind of balance each other a little bit. That's that little touch of sweet makes the harshness from the rye
tolerable.
Yeah, just more balanced. Like, it's more complex. There's more to it than just...
Yeah. There's definitely a caramely taste to it, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. What did we have last week? We had the High West Bourbon, which is also kind of a high rye mash bill, if you will. Mm-hmm. I think that one was like 70-something corn. This one is 68% corn and then 28% rye. So I think this has higher rye, of course, than the High West Bourbon, and it's 4% malted barley, so no wheat at all, at a 90 proof, so 45% ABV.
Yep. I dig it. Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, this is, and it's, the price point is good here in Washington. It was $26 mm-hmm. before taxes. You know, there's smaller bottles. I was actually going to tell you to go look in the fifths.
Mm-hmm. I did. I saw those, and I almost got it, except the small bottle was like $18, yeah, and the regular bottle was like 24,
yeah,
or something.
I know.
Alcohol's a little bit cheaper here, or 29. Maybe, no, it was 30. It was like 30 on the nose, but the taxes were included in that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this was 26 before taxes, and I think taxes are like 14% or some shit like that.
It's 35% per
gallon.
Something like that.
Yeah.
$35 per gallon. I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's expensive to drink here. You know, and I was going through, because last podcast, I talked about Screwball, because I was looking over here, and all I had was banana whiskey, which I hate. And so I bought a little bottle of Screwball from Total Wine & More. But while I was over there, the amount of flavored whiskeys now is...
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
There's sriracha-flavored whiskey.
Just what whiskey needs is more burn.
There's maple. Maple flavored. There's actually peanut butter and jelly whiskey.
If you're up for it, I wouldn't mind doing some of it. I think it might be fun.
Yeah. No,
there is.
Let's do it on a Friday or Saturday, so if I barf or have a terrible hangover the next day, it'll be better.
One of the things I was going to say while I was looking around at Total Wine & More is the like tiny to-go bottles, like the one-shot bottles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are growing in popularity, it seems. And so it used to be you'd just get like Fireball and Bum Rum in those little bottles, or whatever the big names, like Jose Cuervo and Bacardi. But now I'm starting to see a lot more smaller batch places, or maybe not even smaller batch, but better whiskeys and alcohols in those small bottles. So
yeah,
I think that could be a fun one to do as well, is, you know, picking up some of those like $2 or $3 bottles instead of a full bottle.
Yeah.
And just seeing how it goes.
I don't know. You only getting a taste. So it's like,
Buy two. But like, then you don't have to have a whole bottle.
I hate Fireball. And the fact that we golfed while drinking Fireball made golf tolerable.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was bad.
Yeah, it was. Man. Yeah. And we're like, yeah, let's go party. And then everyone went back to the house and went to sleep.
Except you and I. We're troopers.
That's right. We certainly rallied.
We know how to hold our own.
Yeah.
Well, that's because we're mentally tough, John.
We are mentally tough. That's a nice segue. That's
thanks.
Little on the nose.
Well, you know, I listened to the last episode because I have to, because I'm doing all the trying to make it sound better and just trying to make this work. And we'll get it in. We'll dial it in. And I noticed that we did touch a little bit on mental toughness when we were talking about fear in the last episode. And at least I did. I talked a lot about fortifying my mind. Mm-hmm. And I gave us a bunch of options, some things that I've been either listening or watching on YouTube and whatnot. So this was one of them that we picked and talked about mental toughness. And one of the people that I really admired for his mental toughness that I don't know personally is David Goggins. Do you know David Goggins?
By name. You're going to have to remind me.
So he was, he's got a whole autobiography. Man, I can't remember what the name of it was now. I'm sure if I looked it up. But it's basically he grew up with a dad who abused him. And
oh yeah, he's the Navy SEAL.
Yeah, and he had to do it like 3 times.
Can't hurt me.
Yeah, can't hurt me. Yeah, or yeah.
Or built not born.
No, it's can't hurt me, and that's his big thing. Like he had broken legs and broken feet, and yet he still did the hardcore SEAL stuff and whatnot. And
yeah.
And just, and so when I think of someone who's like mentally tough, insane, but mentally tough, he's a person that I kind of go to, and he's very good in the motivational arena as well, you know, trying to pump you up. And I think that's kind of what we need sometimes, or we need to hear people or their stories, because that's what inspires us is stories. If we don't have an example in our own life, you know, is hearing stories of people who have triumphed over, you know, adversity or their own, I guess their own body working against them, which I feel like all the time, like my body's just working against me. So how do I overcome this? Or even your mind, you know, how your mind is oftentimes, you know, trying to take control of you. And so I think a lot of mental toughness, I don't know, the more I thought about it, comes to learning how to control yourself, learning to be not a master of others, but a master of yourself, or a master of yourself maybe first, and then learning how to, you know, live and operate in the world that way.
Well, and I think people get confused or maybe mix it up or look at it wrongly in that, like one of the videos that you shared, I thought was interesting because it highlighted this a bit, that like having anxiety or being afraid is a separate thing from being mentally tough, you know? And like, there's a real, human evolutionary reason to be fearful and to have anxiety. The mental toughness is how you respond to that. It's not that you don't be afraid or you don't get afraid or you don't have anxiety about things, but you respond to it in a way that it doesn't rule your life, or you know how to deal with it. You don't cower and run away. Sometimes you do because it's a lion and it's going to eat you.
Yeah.
You know, but it's instead of like falling down on the ground and letting it eat you, you figure out a way, or you decide to act instead of not act.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. So well, I mean, you're right. I think it was it was a woman who was doing the presentation on that one.
That was a great one. That short. So it was so good that I shared it with my team at work.
Yeah.
I was like, because we just went through a whole big mix up at work, and I work with a lot of.
I saw that on Zero Hedge.
Yeah. They,
massive layoffs at Wayfair.
Yeah. They, laid off 870 people all of last Friday.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of the people that I work with have never been through these things before. They've never had to deal with, like, I mean, it's one thing I'm learning about Boston. There's a lot of
millennials.
There's a lot of families that send their kids to schools. There's colleges everywhere.
Oh, sure. So people need the money. They need the income.
Well, it's like there's so many people that grew up in a world of privilege where they're not used to adversity. Hmm. They've never had to like fight for anything.
Or yes.
Challenged. And then in this moment when things get mixed up and they weren't even directly affected, they panic. And I think one of the benefits of growing up in a family that didn't always have everything we needed. I mean, we never were wanting, but we had to earn it.
Yeah.
I had to earn it.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of tragedy. You learn to face things, and you learn to know that you're going to come out of it in the end, and like focus on that instead of focusing on how bad it is right now. So like I was telling Helen, like I was kind of coaching some of these people and like almost cheerleading, like it's going to be fine. So we've got a little bit more work. The worst case is in 6 months, they have to lay other people off. But the best case is you're better for it. They kept you for a reason. Own that. Take on the extra work and see where it goes. But sitting here worrying about it, it's not going to change anything. It's not going to help you.
That's true. That's good. I'm glad you were there to do that.
Yeah.
And I think you know, even after listening to our last podcast, you know, we kind of talked on surface things, but there's a root. And as I was thinking about it, it's like, what is the root? Why? How did we go from a generation
even before ours, so would that be the boomers, you know, where, you know, they still were tough, or they still knew how to, like, they knew that, you know, adversity is a thing, and maybe because their parents went to war and they experienced some war and stuff like that, or sacrifice, there had to be some sort of sacrifice as a family or even as an individual, and that is the thing that kind of makes you more resilient. I was trying to find a root cause, because we weren't touching it. I think we were kind of surfacing it, the fear, and what drives that fear, and why does it seem to me that the generation that is coming up behind us, whether they're millennials or zoomers, they often, not all, but they often seem not as resilient. They seem not necessarily weaker, but like when adversity comes, they crumble quicker, or they don't know what to do, or they don't know how to endure, or they have maybe they have more coping mechanisms than we did, and so they're coping more. And then maybe social media is kind of firing it off and exaggerating those fears, or exaggerating certain things, and not offering help, but offering, multiplying exponentially the fearfulness of not being liked or loved or who you are and all that. You know what I mean? So I was kind of going through this whole thought cloud in my brain about, you know, like, where does this all lead, and could this go to this and that go to that? And then when I was thinking about mental toughness, is I wasn't really taught to be mentally tough, but, you know, I got in fights. I got my ass kicked. I got beat up by a gang. I got stuff stolen off of me. I had girls tell me no. You know, I had girls that I really, really liked say they didn't want anything to do with me. I had moments where I was suicidal. You know, I had all of those things, and mostly the suicidal was like a cry for help more than anything else. I didn't physically hurt myself, but I told people, like, I'm gonna kill myself, you know, because you're just looking for some kind of attention. You're trying to find a way to emotionally get out how you're feeling. And you're trying to think of all the ways, and sometimes they're really stupid. And so, I mean, but I had to go through all that in order to kind of realize, like, this isn't the way, this isn't the way, this isn't the way. And as I've gotten older, I've had people in my life that have also kind of helped me through that, not to cope, but rather to, like, solve, or I see them by their example, like my last boss, John Nobis. You know, they're just people who are just hard work. They just work through it. Or their attitude, he's a very strong Christian. His attitude was just kind of like, you know, hey, I only got this one life, man. So I'm going to make the most of it. And I'm not going to spend time crying and whining about it. I'm just going to move forward. And yes, this sucks. And I admit this sucks, but this is the thing. And so there's going to be something out of this. And having that mindset going into any problem or an adversity that, you know, I know that this is not the end. I know that I'll come out of this, as shitty as this is, a better person or more resilient. And I'll try not to, and I think this is an important thing, I'll try not to allow it to change me in a terrible way, where I become bitter, or I become, you know, hateful, but rather, like, grow from this, you know, really hard moment. And I've had moments like that too, where I'm like, I can hear in my head the choice, like, you have a choice right now. What are you going to do? Are you going to become an asshole, terrible person, or are you going to take a high road and make something better out of this?
Yeah, I feel like though, like, you know, we like to think about previous generations as being like this great generation that was more mentally tough than we are, but there's a bit of a balance, and we did kind of touch on the same thing last week, where it's like it's more of an attitude than an internal reality, where we portray ourselves as being mentally tough. And that generation that came before us was taught that being mentally tough meant you didn't have feelings, or you didn't talk about them, you didn't share them. Being tough meant suck it up and ignore it. And I feel like that's just as unhealthy as skewing to the other side, where you're constantly afraid of your entire world, and you have to share all of these, and you need somebody all the time coddling you. Like, those are the two opposite ends of the spectrum.
So I agree with that 100%.
The absolute opposite way.
Yeah.
And so we need to find that balance where we're allowed to be afraid, we're allowed to have anxiety, and we're allowed to talk about it.
Yes.
But we don't allow it to rule our lives.
Yep.
And that's where we're at right now, is this, yeah, like this constant ruling of our lives of these stressful situations instead of learning to deal with them. And, you know, like there's something very empowering about talking about something out loud and getting it off your chest.
Yeah.
And like we've talked about that for years, just get it off your chest. It's going to be fine. And I feel like, especially working around some younger people now, that's such a grandpa thing to say, but working around people, it's like I can see it where it's like you're just dwelling on this perceived tragedy instead of taking a look at it, saying, okay, so what do I do from here? How do I move forward?
It's good,
all
John.
You're thinking about it's is good. That how rough this moment is, and you just want to keep talking about it. I do that too. I dwell on challenges in my life. And actually, this was actually really nice. Helen called it out, and she said she was actually talking to somebody else about this, that she expected my reaction to this news to be very doom and gloom. Like, because I can do that. Sometimes I dwell on things too long. And she said she was really proud of me because I didn't take that approach. It was like, yeah, I'm a little worried because I'm the new guy, and you know, I don't have any tenure.
And you kind of went through this bullshit with Amazon too.
Yeah. But on the flip side, it's like, well, what's the worst case? They lay me off, mm-hmm, and I go do something else. You know, like, oh, I'm forced to go back to Seattle, or I find another job in Boston, or you know what? It doesn't matter. The reality is they didn't lay me off.
Yeah.
So I'm still working. So the plan has not changed.
No. And I think that's good. I remember you went there to manage people.
Yeah.
And now you're having that opportunity to talk to these young people that, you know, are you 20 years earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And now
I
that
wish
you
I
have
had a manager that was like that. There was like, just it's take a deep breath.
Yeah.
These things happen.
Yeah.
It's going to be OK.
Yeah.
And even if it happens to you, it's going to be OK.
Yeah. And they need someone like that in their life that says, listen, it's OK. I mean, this isn't, even if doors close, doors open. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's something that I've always been cognizant of, especially in my faith. Like, I've had, I don't know how many jobs, and every time, you know, I don't get worried. I just go, all right, well, Lord, wherever you want me to go, I'm just going to go. And if you open up the door, I'll go through it. And if you don't want me to go through that door, make sure it's shut. And I'll just keep my brain and my mind open and my ears open to wherever the Lord leads me. And I have not been disappointed once yet. And I have not been fearful. Like, I know that there's something's going to be there. And all of these things, like we talked about last week, is that instead of treating fear as doom and gloom, which, by the way, I'm really proud of you on that, rather seeing it as opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, honestly, that's a reason why I didn't actually, when I read that news, I didn't mention it to you because I was like, the last thing John needs is me go, hey, did you hear Wayfair's laying off a whole bunch of people? I was like, I bet you already knows. And that's probably last thing he needs on his brain right now is everyone knowing.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because it gives us the opportunity to talk about some very real things. Like, one thing that I know in past layoffs that nobody ever talked about was survivor guilt.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what what a lot of people are going through right now, is this, like,
how come I got to stay and they got to go?
Yeah, like, I feel bad that I wasn't laid off and somebody else's life was just turned upside down.
Yeah.
But it's like, you're worrying about something that's 100% out of your hands.
Yep.
So why worry about it? Like, you got kept. And you know what the best thing you can do is? Those people you knew that got laid off, reach out to them and let them know that you're there for them. And if they need a hand or somebody to talk to or some beer therapy, you know, I get it. It's rough. It sucks to be laid off.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the support structures that we build around our lives, those are the things that I think help us. You know, like I was thinking about this on the train ride home, like what makes me mentally tough? And a big part of it is the people around me, like not even necessarily that I need to go talk to them about it, but that I know they're there to support me if I need them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's important, especially when things are really hard. You know, it's one thing to be mentally tough in a challenging situation that's truly about yourself. But when it affects other people and affects the world around you, being able to lean on people when you're struggling, it's important.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. So here, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I didn't say anything.
So a couple quotes that I kind of wrote down here that I really liked. These are from David Goggins. And this one is, you have to control your brain and take control of it. So one of the things that he learned through this whole process is, you know, is a thing that you have. You do have control over your brain. And at the rare occasion there's a mental illness or something like that that might prevent you, but if you recognize, you know, that you have this thing, or your propensity is to, you know, focus on the worst instead of the best, you know, there are things that you can do for the average person that can, you know, help you in that situation. Like, if you know beforehand, like, I know I'm going to feel this way, I know it's not the truth, so I'm going to try to think about it in a different way. And then remind yourself throughout the day. And I still do this now, actually. If there's certain things, like, I remind myself, like, if I start getting stressed out about things, especially at work, I sit there and I go, it's going to be okay, because you're doing your best. This is kind of out of your hands. And so I'll self-talk myself and just kind of talk myself down, because what I want to do is I want to perform really well. And, you know, I want to do the job that I'm asked to do, and I want to do it to my best of ability. But a lot of my job is also waiting on other people to do their part. And that frustrates me because I have deadlines too. Mm-hmm. And I can only push people so far. It's like a balance between pushing them so far where they don't want to do a thing, or pushing them to finally give me an answer. So, you know, I try to self-talk myself to control my brain, because my brain wants to go in different directions. And I also find myself being scattered brain sometimes. So focusing on things that are most important rather than all the things, mm-hmm, helps me control my mind in that way too, and really focus on what's most important, but also being able to say no to things that I know that just, they're not going to be a part of my life right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't focus on that. No. Like, I can't do that. No.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and I think those are things that, that helped me. I sent you a Zoom meeting too, so I'll join yours.
That's funny. I like to see your face.
Yeah, I do too. I don't like it when the Zoom thing goes away.
This is actually it turned out to be a perfect topic, because I won't go into specifics about what made me think about this, but you see all these, like, these ding-dongs yelling about how they're alpha males and, you know, like, being aggressive and getting in people's faces. Like, that's their version of what an alpha is.
Yeah.
And it's like, nope, you're like the antithesis of what an actual alpha is. The alpha doesn't have to go tell everybody they're the alpha.
No.
You don't threaten and rely on force and intimidation to be the one in charge.
100%.
A true alpha is respected and followed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like years ago, one of the best leadership trainings, it's like probably the only thing I remember from it specifically, but whoever it was that was talking said, if you think you're a good leader, turn around and look who's following you.
Yeah.
And like, if nobody's following you, you're not a leader at all. And if just a bunch of shitheads are following you, you're a terrible leader.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are your disciples. Good luck. Yeah.
But it's like I think about these men that claim to be alphas, and like, I bring this up related to mental toughness, because I feel like people like that are not actually mentally tough.
Yeah.
Like, they're so easily triggered by something that they have to get aggressive. You know, it's like, you know when somebody has lost a fight when they turn to violence to be quote-unquote right.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, you're not mentally tough if that's where you end up going, because you didn't get your way.
Yeah.
Like, you're actually super weak, because you can't have a challenging discussion. You can't talk to somebody that believes differently within you without being triggered in some way that causes you to go into violence mode.
Yep. Nope, I agree with that. And one of the things that I learned, you probably learned this too with your experience with either Mormonism or Christianity, is leading by not just having people follow you, but that you're there with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So instead of a commander who's commanding armies and platoons and stuff like that, you're in the trench fighting with everyone as well as leading.
Yeah.
And so you're leading by not just your words or your rank or whatever, but your seniority, but you're leading by example.
Yeah.
Like my last boss, John Nobis, there wasn't anything he would ask me to do that he would not do himself.
Yeah.
And then he would just come alongside me and do it with me. And if I didn't know how, I'd go, you know, I'd do the honest thing instead of being like macho. I'd be like, yeah, I know how to fucking do that. I'd be like, you know, like I know how to paint, but I'd watch him paint. I go, can you show me how to paint like you paint? Because the way you paint is you're fast, but you're also super accurate. Mm-hmm. Like you hit your lines and it's really good. Can you show me how? And he'd be like, yeah. And he would show me how. He had no problem. He loved just putting people who didn't know on his hip and just show them and then have them do it and encourage them or correct them and then just continue working with them. And he loved chatting too. So he was always talking. And
well, a true leader is about building other people up, right?
Like, yes.
Not about them making you better. It's about you making them better.
Yes.
I have this weird idea of what leadership actually is. And like the person in charge, their job isn't to just be in charge and have everybody be subservient to them.
Yep.
It's to organize and improve and help everybody grow with you. It's like to help everyone succeed together.
Yep.
Instead of like trying to win some award because you're the leader.
Yeah. You know? I always thought about working myself out of a job because everyone else can do my job that I can move on to do other things.
Yeah.
Because exactly they can do my job.
Yeah, why would you want to do your, like, if you really, like, some people just want to do their job that they have forever, and that's great.
Yeah.
But if you want to grow and
move on
different things, somebody's going to have to do your job for you.
Exactly.
And so, like, not allowing somebody to learn to do your job hamstrings you in your ultimate goal.
Yep. Well, and I think people also are, I think that's, it's a weakness because they are afraid someone will be better than them. But if you found someone that was better at your job than you, I would train that person and use them as your protege and get the kudos for raising them up as doing a good job because that reflects on you. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they get a better position and you can actually start vying for a better position as well.
Yeah.
And in the corporate world, a lot of people hate that. Like they will hold secrets because they feel like that's leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just like give it all away.
Yeah, I'm making myself invaluable.
Yes.
Specifically to that, you know, and talk about hiring people who are mentally fragile.
Mm-hmm.
In high school, I got a job at Walmart, and you have to do like this personality test, and it's supposed to judge whether or not you'll be a good employee or something.
Golden retriever or
something. I don't know what it was. They ask you all these questions.
Yeah.
And, they will like not hire you if you don't score well on this test. And it's
interesting.
All, like, it's essentially a personality test. I don't know if they still do this, but they did then. So I took this test and then they called me in afterward to talk with me about a couple of the questions that I answered in a way they believed was questionable about
touching your butthole.
Yeah, I know. I was like, yes, I like to have my cock out while I'm working and feel free.
I like to hang brain. What's the matter with
natural.
This? Gotcha. Yeah.
It's fine. I clean them. I shave. That's the problem.
I'm very hygienic. No,
one of the questions was, do you believe that an employee can do a job better than their manager? And I said yes, which is logical if you think about jobs at Walmart, because I was applying to be a cashier. And I'm like, okay, so you're telling me. And then they question that. They're like, so why did you say that? I was like, well, if I'm doing a job 8 hours a day and somebody is watching me do a job 8 hours a day, who should eventually be better at that job?
Yes.
Right?
Like, yeah.
And that's not, I'm not saying it's bad.
No, that's a logic. It's a logic.
Yeah, it doesn't make managers bad.
No. Like,
they shouldn't be great at the job that they're managing people to do. They should
I agree.
Be at managing people. Their job is to manage people, not to do the thing that the people they manage do.
Yeah.
So it's like such a, it really annoyed me that was an issue. And it's like, if you think I should just like aspire to be less than my manager.
Yeah.
Then this is not a place I should work.
Well,
it's also Walmart.
It's how they saw management.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, exactly. It's a hierarchy, and the levels get better. You're better and better and better as you go. And
sure.
There's actually one thing I really appreciate.
But if you're a good manager, you want your employees to get better and better and better.
Yes, they should get better.
They should. If they're not, then you have a problem.
Yeah, and the culture at Wayfair is actually one that they encourage people. Like, all the managers also do the things that they manage people to do in general. And they're like, they are very open about the way that they work, and that it's all about making people, other people better. Like, your job as a leader as you move up is to manage and improve all the people around you and to be engaged with what they're doing.
That's good. It's good culture.
You're not like the and it starts from like very basic things. Like we don't have offices. It's just big rooms with desks. Like my like three levels above me manager is three desks away from me.
Yeah.
And just the same desk as I have. So if you walked in there without knowing anybody, you wouldn't know who was who.
Yeah.
And that's just the mentality they have. Like, we're all in this together. I'm a manager by title, but that doesn't make me better than you.
Yeah.
It's just a layer of organization that we need in order to help drive.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any one person more or less valuable than anybody else.
I've had bad managers. I've had managers that did not know how to, like, you wondered, like, how did you get here? It must have just been, you've worked here long enough, you're probably management material. Like, how come we're not making you a manager yet? You've been here for 14 years. And you just look at me like, you are dumb. You are dumb. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? Why are you in this position? It just must be seniority. Is you you just made it they're like, we got to move this guy up or kick him out.
Oh, yeah. I had a manager at Amazon that was that way. Like, you've been here 18 years and you're two levels above me. And I've been here 6 months.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like you should be a vice president of something.
Yeah.
Either that or you're just awful and you know how to play the politics to stick around.
Yeah.
Turns out that's really what it was.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's a corporate thing too.
Yeah. It's dumb.
So one of the other quotes here, is, that I liked. It says, finding peace on the opposite side of finding yourself, and no one finds themselves unless they go through trials, tribulations, accountability, and suffering.
That is good.
So being mentally tough is finding peace on the opposite side of finding yourself. And I dwelled on that for a little while because even at 40, God, how old am I? Four?
A thousand.
44 or 45. I can't remember how old I was. Stupid. But anyways, math. And
you got dementia.
Yeah. I was thinking just about, you know, like, even at 40-something, I'm still discovering myself. But I have a better idea who I am than I did in my 20s.
I fully discovered myself at 14.
Not that kind of discovery, buddy. But I'm still growing, and I like that. I want to continue to grow. I want to be in my 60s and still being like, you know, I know who Wes is, but Wes is still also growing. Mm-hmm. But there's a piece that comes with age, and this might also be what some people call the wisdom that comes with age, in which that you know yourself well enough that you know that you're going to act a certain way or that you're going to react a certain way, and that you also have the tools to know how to combat that, or you know how to live with that, or you know how to control that, even that which you don't like about yourself. We all have things that we don't like about ourselves, whether it's physically or mentally, but how do we control that? How do we not participate in hating ourselves? How do we, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And sometimes we have to find that through accountability. So other people calling us out, suffering. So basically dealing with our own mistakes, which I think a lot of people don't deal with. I don't think a lot of people deal with this day and age. Their own mistakes. They don't own up to it. They don't say, yeah, I fucked up. They just like, no, this other person, you know, it's their fault too. They blame other people. And then, you know, just going through trials and tribulations, like there's nothing, again, I don't feel like this world is safe at all. It'll never be safe. There's nothing about the human experience that'll be safe. And that part of that is just going through these things. So you can even say the last couple of years, I've seen a lot of people's, you know, mentality kind of either break down or they've had to reassess what this world's all about. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good, because I think through that we begin to grow and we start to understand and we see things differently than we did before when we were just kind of NPCs. And I think other people kind of went in and NPCs is a non-person character. So they just kind of, they toe the line, they repeat the lines, they're kind of living as, like, if you ever played open world video games, it's like the person you go up to and they repeat the same line every time.
Or watch the new guy.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, a free guy.
The free guy.
Yeah. So just, you know, I think a lot of people walk through life like that, and I think they still do. But, you know, breaking free from that, you know, is also allowing these trials and these hard things and be confronted by hard things to allow you to kind of find peace, like start landing on places that are more solid than where you were before. I don't think a lot of us live in reality.
Do you think people that, like, because, I mean, it's very real that some people never really have any true adversity, and their version of adversity is pretty lightweight. So do you think somebody who doesn't have that adversity, those challenges, like probably most people do, can still build that mental toughness, that resolve? Or do you think it requires it requires you to go through challenges to get there?
I think if you are living a very privileged life, I think it might be harder for you to have those kind of trials and tribulations and go through them. I think people make up problems for themselves most of the time.
That's because they just want something to talk about.
I know, but I think that's bad too, though.
that video, I think we should connect it in the show notes that we don't have.
Yeah, I will. No, I've been putting show notes in.
She, I know,
I'm trying.
I'm referencing episodes years ago.
Years ago?
2 months ago. When you were like, we don't have show notes.
Yeah, say show notes. Show
notes. But she talks about, like, forcing yourself to do things that are uncomfortable.
Yes.
To build
hard things.
Yeah. And like, for her, she's like, even small things. Like, she gets social anxiety and going to places. So when she gets in meetings, she goes and intentionally meets people.
Yeah.
Because it's uncomfortable for her. And she's like, just these little actions that we can take.
Yep.
To improve our psyche and improve our world. I thought that was really valuable. Like, you know, she's talking about something very big, but then the examples she gives are very small.
Yeah.
Like, they're uncomfortable, but they're not hard and they're not impossible.
Yeah.
You just don't want to do them. And so, like, I personally think you can build that resolve without it. I think a lot of people are fortunate to have opportunities to grow that are forced upon them instead of chosen.
Yeah.
Because it's much harder to choose to do that than it is to choose to respond correctly or grow when it's forced on you.
Yep.
But I appreciated that, because it's like, okay, so what are you uncomfortable with? Well, I don't really like running, but I want to exercise. So, okay, I'm going to force myself to go running. Yep. Whatever it is.
Yep.
Do something hard.
Yeah. Do hard things. And we're not told that anymore. We're like, lay in comfort. And I think those are the signs of the end of a civilization.
Yeah, but on the flip side, we do have, like anyone that's ever played sports, like high school athlete, anyone has a good coach. You're not told, like, no, it'll be fine. We're not going to run today because it feels bad. Like, coaches are perfect examples of people in our lives that can help us become mentally tough.
You know, like, I agree.
Like, running stairs, doing a two-a-day in preseason of football, like, there's almost nothing that hurts more than that first
rhinos. Ugh.
Yeah, it's just the worst.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree. I agree 100%. It's, even there's days with Nathan, as him and I have been working out, he's like, I don't really want to do this. And I go, I know. Anyways, here's what we're going to do today. And I just, we do it. I said, listen, it's an hour. It can be longer if you want to take longer, but you're not going to get any benefit out of it, so you might as well just do it.
Yeah.
You know, and then as he's doing it, you know, he's like, this hurts. I go, I know. It hurts for me too. But here we go. Mm-hmm. You know, just go until you can't go.
Yeah. My conversations with my coworkers today were a lot like that, where it's like, I get it. It sucks. It's a bit unknown. We have more work.
Yep.
But you're a rock star. It'll be fine. You just push through it.
Yeah.
You'll learn to cope.
Yeah.
Because guess what? Before you took this job, you didn't know how to do this job, and you learned, and you're great at it. Yep. So learning something else in addition to it is not going to be any different.
Yep.
You're just doing, it's your next challenge in your world. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. Another David.
If it's not fine, raise your hand and say, I'm struggling. Yeah. I need some help.
Yeah, exactly.
And you learn to cope with it and make it right. Yep. Sometimes it is very possible that you're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is, in my world, that is not going to be the case, but you could be overwhelmed. And part of being mentally tough is being able to admit when you need help.
Yeah. But you're only overwhelmed until you learn how to deal. And maybe it's, I need to be better organized. So now I'm going to organize myself better. And now I'm not going to be overwhelmed. And then you get overwhelmed again. And then you start feeling like, I got to think about a way that I can deal with this so that I'm not overwhelmed. I mean, you're always just kind of upping the game.
To some extent, but there is
building.
Like the physical example is like, there is a limit to how much you can squat.
Yes.
Like no matter how much you work at it, there is a limit to how much your body is going to be able to lift.
Yeah, but when you're starting out, you can. There's a ladder. You're growing.
That too.
Yeah.
But there is my point is there is a point when you need a spotter.
Mm-hmm.
There is a point when you're like, I just I'm working as hard as I can, and I just don't have the bandwidth to get this done.
Yeah.
And being able to push to that point and then raise your hand, like to me, that's also being mentally tough.
Yes.
And because you don't just give up when it's hard, but you also are willing to ask for help when you need it.
Yeah. Well, like David Goggins, I mean, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, running on broken legs and whatnot, but he's doing it also to become a Navy SEAL. And Navy SEALs are all about working as a team. Mm-hmm. So he has to rely, and they have to rely on him, you know, and so they all have to be mentally tough, but they also all have to trust each other and their abilities as well.
Well, and that in of itself, too, is like a version of being tough.
Oh.
It's like, it's hard to, like, in stressful situations to get some of your safety and put it in the hands of somebody else. Like, you know, we talk about that kind of thing all the time. You know, like, who would you be willing to hold who would be your spotter when you're climbing the mountain or whatever it is? Who's that person that you're going to rely on for your personal safety?
Yep.
And who do you trust to do that? And like, you know, like having those people in your world, like you're one of those people to me, like I know no matter what, any time, any minute, if I needed your help, you would be there.
I'd run.
And
to you, not away.
To me. I know. And then we'd snuggle and eat some popcorn.
We would. It would be a great night.
And watch The Notebook.
Yeah. Yep. It'd be good.
Oh, no. Silver Linings Playbook.
That's actually a good movie.
I like that movie.
I'm okay with that. So is Joy. Maybe I have a crush on Jennifer Lawrence. I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe I have a crush on Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. He wasn't in either of those.
I think you're thinking of, what's his name? Like, yes, I know what you're saying. Yes.
I find mental toughness. There's a song that music affects me a lot. Like it does a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a song that came on today, kind of got me thinking about it. And it's like, I know that part of the reason that I am mentally tough in most situations is because of Helen.
Yep.
Like I think about her when I'm making decisions or when I'm challenged, and I know that she's there to support me. I know that I have that, and that, like,
you have someone in your corner
to be there for me if I need it. And so, like, being able to rely on other people, you know, this it almost goes back to the
good,
safe
John.
Place conversation, right? Like, I've been thinking about this since our last conversation, like where safe places. Helen brought it up. The safe place conversation actually didn't start with Starbucks. It started way before that. And I can't remember if it was, it was like a real, actual support network work that was built. It was sort of absconded by Starbucks, and I think in part of a PR campaign. But like, my safe place that helps me deal with my situations, even though, like, knowing that that safe place is there helps me be stronger. And not everybody has that.
Yeah.
So some people need these physical places because their world is fucked up. They don't have a Wes that they can run to and ask for help. They don't have a Helen or a Dana or a Tim. Hey, Tim, thanks for the review, by the way.
Oh, yeah, we got to read that. Thanks for the update. But go on with your thought, because you're on a good train.
But people don't. Not everybody has that.
Yeah.
And so whether or not somebody uses the safe place, like Starbucks or whatever other place has a sign on their door or not, I think creates an ecosystem in their world that allows them to push forward because they know there's somewhere they can go if they truly need help.
Yep.
You know, like, people are scared. And if, like you and I are robust tough guys.
Yeah, we are.
Not tough guys, but kind of tough guys. Not everybody has that. Not everybody has that luxury.
Smart guys.
Honestly, it is a luxury in a lot of the world that we have to know that I'm generally pretty safe. Not everybody has that support structure. And even if it's just the simple act of being able to walk into a Starbucks and know that they're going to be okay, yeah, so that they can move forward in their day and their lives.
I mean, I know. And as I was listening to it, I don't think I was expressing myself exactly how I was.
Because it comes across as like we're creating these like padded rooms for people so that they never hurt themselves.
Yes, it does.
And I don't think that's the intent.
No.
And I can understand how people take it that way.
Yeah.
But I think people need to think deeper than their own personal world. Like you and I, yes, we struggled. I was bullied too. I've had my struggles here and there, but I don't know what it's like to be truly persecuted for something. Right? Like because I look different or act different. And in fact, like in junior high, I was that asshole that would make fun of people.
Yeah.
Because I found this unexpected popularity when I moved from California to Idaho, and I was a dickhead, and I feel really bad about it because there were people that they didn't need that. They had enough challenges in the world, and I made it harder on them.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the support structure that I had, that I was fortunate enough to have. And so creating places that people can have that, I think, is important.
Yep. Well, and one of the things that my conscience led me to do at my 10-year high school reunion was realizing what an asshole I was to those that were, at the time I felt, were lower on the pecking order, and apologizing to them at the 10-year reunion. And I remember, I won't say their names, it was two of them, and I probably made their life hell. Well, me and my friends probably made their life hell. One kid because he was poor, and the other kid because he was kind of mousy in his appearance. And I mean, I think as I think back on it, of course, I think, you know, we were following maybe some kind of social norm or something like that, but we were also, we were also maybe, our own insecurities made us feel better about our own insecurity as well. I'm sure there's lots of psychological 100% bullshit going on there, but, I remember apologizing to them because I just felt my conscience needed to say, you know, hey, I'm sorry if I made life difficult for you, while you're going here. That wasn't right. And one of the kids, he was an adult, one of the guys, he looked at me and goes, no, man, it's all right. And I said, no, it's not all right. I was an asshole. And he just kind of looked at me and he goes, yeah, you were an asshole. I said, I was an asshole and I'm really sorry about that. And he goes, no, that means a lot that you said that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not humble bragging. I'm admitting that I was an asshole. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I'm glad that my conscience wanted to rectify that. Like there's something inside me that said that was wrong. And, and who knows that like my teasing or my attitude, towards this person, I mean, maybe I put him on a path that wasn't optimal for him just because always in the back of their head, they had this Wes Olsen in their brain going, you fucking loser. You're not going to, you know, I don't think I ever said that, but you know, stuff like that just treated them like they were less than. So then they felt like they were less than, you know, but on the other hand, I mean, they were still there and they were thriving or maybe they're surviving. I don't know. I didn't go to my 20 year, so I don't know how they're still doing.
Well, hopefully great.
Well, I really hope so. And, but, you know, I still feel remorse for that because, you know, I was, it's not the kind of person that I want to be known as, you know, and so I understand what you're saying. And that, you know, I hope that he had, or they had, both of them had, you know, some kind of support that would encourage them, to be, the antidote to my assholeness.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, it's really great that that you like that's a very real world. I think a lot of us have been on one side or the other of that coin.
Yeah.
And you know, your willingness to say something, I think it's huge. And I don't think enough of us acknowledge our fuck ups. And they don't, like, the reality is you can never make it right.
Right.
Because the damage is done.
Yeah.
But you can mitigate it the best you can. And you know, the odds are they haven't thought about you in 10 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, you brought it up. I feel like you can bring a faith in people that was lost because of the shitty things you were doing. Because that person admits they were being shitty.
Yeah.
That honesty, I think, is really important. I don't.
Well, maybe it starts something in their brain where, like, well, maybe I'm not an asshole, or maybe, mm-hmm. you know, like, maybe I'm not a loser. Maybe they're thinking, mm-hmm. this person just apologized because they're an asshole. Maybe I'm not what they said I was.
It is interesting that
I don't know.
I find this part really interesting too, though, because you do hear stories about people who are bullied. They're like, you know, bringing it back to the topic of mental toughness. There is a small population of people that take that bullying.
Yeah.
Very personal and say, all right, well, fuck off. I'm going to do the best thing ever.
Yeah, I'm going to show you. A good example
of that is like,
sure.
like Tom Brady was drafted in the 7th round, which is it's no man's land of quarterbacks. Like, that person is never supposed to do anything.
Yeah.
And he took it as a personal slight and said, fuck off. Now I'm going to be the greatest of all time. And he's arguably the greatest football player of all time. You know, so yeah. there is that mental toughness that you can have instilled in you that takes that slight differently.
Yeah.
The challenge is, and I'm not saying this advocating for bullying by any means, but I think the challenge is, to the right person it works well, but to most people, like that specific instance is like a one off.
Yeah.
It's the like, oh, I got slighted this one time, fuck off. Whereas a lot of people that struggle, it's the daily barrage of shitty feelings and shitty emotions and yep. shitty people just treating them poorly. So I think we need to be really aware of how we treat the people around us, how we talk to them, and how we work to constantly build them up.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if it's somebody we know personally or somebody we just ran across. Like,
sure.
Ellen is one of the best people about this. She engages every human being as if they were a human being. It doesn't matter if they're dirty, crazy homeless people or privileged somebody else, business person walking down. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
She treats people like they are humans.
Yeah.
And I love her for that. It's one of the things I love the most about her. It also is a little frustrating when it's like, we have a place to go and you're communicating with a person that is clearly a little nuts out. But again, like, she loves people, and I think that whether she knows it or not, is making the entire world a better place, because those people take that, they accept it.
Yeah.
It makes them better humans, which in turn makes them want to treat other people better.
I agree. I think Dana does the same thing. Dana has two reactions. People either love her and they are very... I've been to places where Dana meets complete strangers, and within 10 minutes, they have told her their terrible life story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why. And she doesn't either. There's just something about her. And I have mm-hmm. people where she just rubs them the wrong way right off the bat. And
yeah.
And I know you know someone that has had that too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And and I don't know what that is, and it's fine, because I think I'm probably the same way with people.
You know what it is?
Huh.
You know what it is?
Tell me.
I think... So, like, Dana is so... She's a leaner. She's like...
A leaner?
She leans in.
Well, that's because she's deaf.
Well, no. Like, not... No. Maybe that's part of it. But, like, she leans in, and she's, like, almost so engaged in the conversation that
oh, yeah.
it feels forced. And I think it throws people off that are uncomfortable with actual deep conversations.
And British.
So, like, in the case that you're referring to, I think that's what it is this person was thrown off by somebody who, like, actually wants to know them on a deeper level.
Yeah.
And they are uncomfortable with it because they're not in tune with their emotions in any meaningful way.
Yeah. And she gets that a lot because of just the environment which she works in.
Yeah.
Which is a bunch of often gruff men. And then some really sweet men, and often very troubled people.
Put it that way. I think you and I, Wes, are surrounded by some pretty wonderful people in our world.
No, I think we're fortunate in that.
I think we are.
Yeah.
Well,
blessed in that.
I do think about this too. Like, fortunate is one of my favorite words. But I also think it's something that you and I have, as people, have nurtured in our world. Because you and I are similar in that we're trying to, like, I'm not a great person all the time, but I try to be.
Yeah.
And I think because we're trying, we surround ourselves with other people that are trying.
Yeah.
And it just creates this great world of, like, imperfect, amazing people.
Yeah. I'm just trying to be, for me, I'm just trying to be genuine. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to constantly figure out who genuine Wes is. And I'm learning that genuine Wes is different in different situations. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I catch myself trying to be someone I'm not. And I go, you know, and I'll have to stop myself and go, why am I agreeing to this? This is not who you are. You're just doing it because you're trying to people please. Mm-hmm. Be yourself and just allow them to either reject or accept you as who you are. That's a very big growing thing for me. Mm-hmm. You know, cause I'm weird. I like weird things.
Kind of freaking frogs gay.
I mean, I like exploring weird ideas. I like talking about them. That. You know, I like, normies, what I call normies, just, you know, NPCs, I guess, just that's just not their bag. It's too abnormal for some people.
Wes, you're being a lot right now.
Yeah.
I just need to take a break.
Yeah, but I mean, I like deep conversations. Thanks. You know, your wife and I, we get into it sometimes, and I like it.
Yeah, and then your wife and I on the side, and we drink and we laugh at you too.
I know. And you know, I don't have a big sphere of people that I can just kind of debate things with, knowing that at the end of the day we're gonna hug it out, and just it's not personal. And I try not to make things personal. It's just,
I mean, the reality is, given what I know of the listening audience, we don't either.
Yeah. No, yeah.
You know, like our conversations is a safe place, and I really appreciate you, like people like you and Tana that are willing to have those hard conversations and know that we can disagree and know that we're going to love each other when it's over.
Yeah.
There are other people in my life that I love dearly that I would not go down those roads with because it would turn awkward or combative. Sure. Yeah. Or
but that's, like, part of it, you know. I mean, that's just being human.
There's no discussion.
Well, there's, like, no ground rules.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think with us, there's ground rules. We know each other well enough that we know that, you know, like if we touch some third rails, if we touch, like, abortion, climate change, and I don't know what else, if we touch some third rails, we're going to be on opposite sides of those tracks. And
but I think that's fine. Like,
and that's fun. Yeah. I actually enjoy those things. But we also know at the end of the day, you're going to be like, that fucking Wes is crazy. I'm going to be like, that John is fucking crazy, but I love him.
There's a mutual
respect. And I appreciate his view.
Yeah, it's not a personal attack.
That's no. It's never personal.
Because
we're debating ideas. We're not debating people.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's fine to have conversations about things you disagree with.
Yeah.
But what's not fine is for me to tell you that I think you're a fucking idiot because
of it's personal. Mm-hmm.
Now it's personal.
Yes.
Like, that's got to be off the table. And, like,
yes.
I don't think we ever stacked hands and agreed on the rules, but we've always kind of been able to negotiate
these. Yeah, they're unwritten. Sure.
There's an understanding.
Yes.
First things first, I love you.
Yep. And I love you.
I want you in my world.
Yes.
Right? And then outside of that, everything else is fair game.
Yeah, I don't want homogenous people. I don't. Well, I don't want it.
It's boring.
I mean, it's comfortable, but it's not.
You get into, like, Pleasantville territory.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, which, and it's escapism. Yeah. And I think that's why sometimes I feel uncomfortable in churches now, because I feel like people are just the same thing I see about the same thing about things that I disagree with people. I find sometimes in things that I agree with people, where it's like, you know, you're just repeating party lines. Why are you doing that?
Oh my gosh, Wes. have you ever watched the YouTube channel Betty Bowers?
Mm-mm.
She's hilarious. She does, like, these explanation of things.
Yeah.
And it's all tongue-in-cheek, and a lot of it's sarcastic. And she had one, I can't remember exactly what she's talking about, but one of the best, like, one-liners. And
America's Best Christian. Yes.
No.
She does a lot of deepfake stuff. Mrs. Betty Bowers.
It's not deepfake. Like, she's just pretending to be on the side of one thing, but it's like pointing the hypocrisy.
Jesus picks his very favorite moments from Betty's videos from 2008 to July 2014.
And then there's one. Oh, that's what it was about. Christian.
Betty's sex tape.
It was about Christian nationalism.
Yeah. She looks like Nancy Pelosi.
Not really.
Well, I think her makeup is supposed to make her look like Nancy Pelosi without the giant jugs.
She's supposed to look like a proper, like, 60s.
Yes. Uh huh. Like, yeah.
Housewife.
Yeah.
That's the intent.
With the bob.
And so she had a quote.
It's my new favorite thing.
She was talking about Christian. Yeah, it's Christian nationalism, something like that.
Okay.
That's something like the far right is going way after.
Yes.
And the quote in it was, the Constitution is like the Bible. You only have to remember the parts you like.
K. Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah. It made me laugh because it's like, oh my gosh. Because she was pointing out the hypocrisy of it, where it's like, the Constitution doesn't talk about Jesus once. In fact, it talks about it excluding Jesus. But then, like, these people think that Jesus wrote the Constitution and he had his hand in it. So it's like, why would he write this document and not keep himself involved?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
It's just, like, super dumb.
Well,
but
yeah. There's actually a really good conspiracy about the person who helped with the Constitution.
Oh, I'm sure there is. That's another.
His problem. Name's not Jesus.
But it was also like that. How a lot of Christians who don't know the Bible like to use bullet points to prove their point.
Yeah,
and it is in direct contradiction to other parts of the Bible.
Yeah,
so I just thought it was really funny.
If we just take the life of Jesus and how he worked and operated within the world and the people around him, we get a different picture than a Western world Jesus.
Oh yeah.
And that's the thing that I think frustrates me the most is the politicization of Christianity or any religion, mm-hmm. honestly.
Yeah.
The kingdom of God is not of this world. It's not a Republican or a Democrat. It's not a political stance. It's not. The kingdom of God is above all that. And so as Christians, we're supposed to operate in, but not of, and know that this is not, we're just pilgrims, sojourners, mm-hmm. travelers walking through this world, but it's not home. And so our effect is supposed to be a positive one and not, and know that the world, and I think a lot of Western Christians have this hard time, like the world is going to do what the world's going to do. I mean, you could try to stop it and you can try to, like, you know, maybe talk to someone about it in a winsome way. But at the end of the day, I mean, people are going to do what they're going to do. You can't control them. And by controlling them is manipulation, which is a form of lying. And that's not who Jesus was about either. He allowed people to be who they were.
Love and acceptance.
What's
Jesus
that?
Jesus was the original. Jesus was the OG hippie.
I mean, he kind of was. I mean, it wasn't long radical hair, but it was radical.
A lot of weed, drank all the wine. You know, he did.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Jesus. I mean, there's nothing in the Bible that says that, you know, that any herb is, you know, it's just don't get drunk on other things, but be drunk in the Holy Spirit. So, which is a term of, you know, kind of watching yourself. It's also a self-control thing. It's a self-control thing,
it's a mental toughness thing as well.
It's, you know, knowing that, you know, like, hey, you know, I know how much I can have before I'm like, and I'm out.
So
I have to control myself. And
don't lose control.
Yeah, and don't lose control. That's exactly what he's saying. So, anyways, you know, when I was thinking about Christianity as well as or my faith and mental toughness as well, and that was having the mind of Christ kept coming up to me, and thinking about having the mind of Christ, and that was one of, you know, peace and love and loving. When I was on the podcast with Sir Seat Sitter on Abs in a Six Pack, you know, one of the things that I kept, you know, telling him was like, Christianity is summed up in love your Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's so simple. It's not rules and regulations. It's loving God with everything, and from that, loving others and loving yourself. And that's not navel gazing, but that's seeing yourself in the valuable way in which God sees you and others.
And so Wes, yeah. I actually love this topic.
Yeah.
And I think we could talk for another hour on it. I think we should make a part B to this podcast.
No, and we will, but
because I really do enjoy it. I agree with you. I think that I agree with you for different reasons.
Yeah.
But my questions create topics that would keep us talking.
No, I understand. Hours. So I'll just swing it around to mental toughness. So when I think about right. that, I'm thinking about in mental toughness, is the things that I'm thinking about or the things that I'm doing creating that kind of attitude? Am I encouraging yeah. others? Am I being an example of a person who knows himself well in front of a God and can encourage them and love them as God would love them, even if they don't believe or agree with the same things I agree? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that's the peace that I have in knowing myself and not wanting to be a people pleaser. But you know, if you're not trying to please people, but you're trying to love people as God loves them, that's a whole different thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's a greater love than I can make up, if that's, you know, like a quote unquote make up. You can't see me now because Zoom ended. So anyways, that's kind of what I was thinking. I have a lot of notes still on mental toughness, but.
No, we should have a part two.
We should have a part two because this is a good conversation. This was a good podcast. Hopefully, if I get the audio right on this, this might be one that people will really enjoy.
Yeah. And shout out to Tim for his
glorious
review. I want to appreciate that.
I'm going to read it.
You can do it right now?
Yeah.
All right, do it.
So this is from John's neighbor, Tim.
Love Tim.
John kept Tim from me for a very long time, and I finally met Tim this summer.
He's my own secret favorite neighbor.
Yep. And yet him and I are very much alike, I probably think, in many ways. And I've yet to meet his wonderful wife. Is her name Amy?
Amy, yep.
I like that name, Amy.
And Lucy. Did you meet Lucy?
I have not met Lucy either.
Lucy's adorable.
So as many times as I've been at your house, I don't know why I have not met these wonderful people.
Well, we'll make it happen.
I hope we do. And he says, only because you asked nicely. And his tag on Apple is for his honor, which I appreciate. It says, this is my first review of any podcast ever. I'm Tim, the neighbor of John, who listens to every episode and has been mentioned a few times lately. And I think that I should decline ever joining a recording just to keep the mystery alive.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. I love the mixture of knowledge about the various beers, bourbons, or whiskeys, and the lone cocktail they've consumed, and the topics they cover with the moments of balderdash.
More cocktails.
Yeah. It's fun. Dana wants me to be her own naked personal cocktail maker. But that's between us. It's fun, and now everyone else. It's fun and mimics the conversations I've had the pleasure of joining right across the street. Love these guys and their podcasts! Exclamation point. You should listen to it too. You should. Tell your friends.
You should.
And leave a review. You should. And tell your friends.
You should.
So they'll have someone else to mention other than me. A loyal listener and friend. And I'm sure if I had some kind of donation button, Tim probably would have donated too.
No, we'll get Tim ahead.
Yep.
You got another? We'll get.
Oh, we can't say that because my sister-in-law is pretty mad at me that I would not give her a hat because she has not been on the podcast.
What? Yeah, but Tim's now been on the podcast, sort of.
Sort of, I guess so. So Jennifer
counts.
Jennifer's making me a beer, bourbon, and balderdash shirt. So for those that are listening now, my brother is the one that created our logo, which we really, really like.
Love it.
And my brother's been on the podcast. I forget what episode that was, but you can look it up. And he got a hat because we had hats made for beer, bourbon, and balderdash. And so my sister-in-law is now very upset that she does not get a hat just by the very fact that she married my brother. I told her.
But she doesn't even listen.
She doesn't listen. That's true. And yeah. she will not be on the podcast because every time she brings it up, I said, would you like to be on the podcast? She goes, no, I don't want to be on your stupid podcast. Oh,
she would be fun to be on the podcast.
She would be fun because you know what?
When
she
says, no, I don't want to be on the stupid podcast, she wants to be on that podcast.
Yeah. Well, next time we have a family function, so it could be Sophia's birthday or Nathan's birthday.
We're going to stick it to her.
We're going to have her come down here and we're going to do a live podcast with Jennifer Olson, Hip and Steel. And we're going to give her a hat. But she's going to make me a shirt with the logo.
Okay.
In exchange for a hat. So we're doing an exchange because she doesn't want to be on the podcast because I think maybe she knows how nonsensical this is.
I want to know what she has to say.
Well, it's funny because I had sent her a clip from No Agenda about teachers in the Puyallup School District. So she works for the, not Enumclaw School District, but she's out there. She's next to the Puyallup School District. Mm-hmm. And they were doing some fucking woke thing or whatever out there. And I said, is this true? And my brother, when I talked to him recently, I saw him this last weekend. And my brother goes, dude, I was about to text you, like, why did you send this to Jennifer? You know you're just going to get shit for this. And I did. She texted back, like, what kind of bullshit are you listening to? This No Agenda show. She's like, what are they talking about? And I'm like, is this true? She goes, I don't know. I don't work for that fucking school district. And I went, okay. but her school district apparently doesn't do that.
We'll get her on board. We'll get her synced up. We'll have some fun.
Well, I love Jennifer. I really do. And I think I love that she's a spitfire. I like that she tells it like it is. She's a realist.
Yep.
And
she's correct and honest, and I love
her. Oh yeah. So. I love that about her too. I think it's fantastic. And my poor brother. So
Well, Wes, as always, it was wonderful talking to you.
Yeah, you too, man. You got a flight tomorrow morning. You get to come home.
I'm so excited to be home.
You get to touch your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you get all to touch places. Me. You get to go to Chelan. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I know. No Parents Weekend. The annual No Parents Weekend.
Yeah. And then I think we're hooking up on Sunday.
I don't like you like that.
No, I think we're meeting on Sunday to hang out and look at wedding pictures. Hooking
up is like a different... Oh, yeah. That should be fun.
Yeah. But I'm just excited just to hold you in my arms. Mm. Maybe scoop you.
Yeah.
I know, like, you missed that.
Like, who sings that song? Just Died in Your Arms Tonight.
I just died in your arms tonight. Must have been something I said. Yeah, that was good.
I should have walked away.
Whoa, I should have walked away. So we'll do mental toughness, and we'll talk maybe a bit about leadership. I like where we're going with this on the next episode.
Like touching those things.
Yep. And who knows what we're going to be drinking next time. We can do some Trader Joe's nonsense.
I have a thing. I'll bring it.
Even the whiskey?
It's actually, I thought I just bought a whiskey. It turns out I bought a flavored whiskey. I'm bringing it home.
Oh, you are?
Oh, yeah.
We're doing a flavored one?
Sort of. It's weird.
I'll get the puke bucket out. All right, everybody, this is Beer, Bourbon, and Balderdash. Next time you hear from us, it'll be face-to-face. Well, at least for Johnny and I. And if I get my poop in a group, I'll actually be having a donation page because all this mental toughness talk and focusing on what's important has gotten me a little bit more motivated than I have before. So
look forward to that.
Yes, thank you. Thank you all for listening. If you like what you're hearing, tell your friends. This is a value for value show, which means we really want listener support. And so tell everybody if you found any kind of value in this to listen and leave comments. Tell us all kinds of nonsense. We even have a phone number that you can call if you wanted to tell us how dumb we are or how cool we are, because we're cool kids.
We are cool kids.
We are cool kids. And you can leave us a voicemail. That
doesn't make us better than other people.
Yeah. And that voicemail will play online if you want. And the number is 360-553-1058. That's 360-553-1058. And John, I can't wait to see you in the flesh, my brother.
Yes, sir. Big squeezes.
Big squeezes. Love you.
Love you too.
Bye-bye. Bye.